The subject is yoga techniques for health and happiness. Yoga is a very ancient science, probably the most ancient science that we know. It's a science of humanity. It's a science for developing man rather than developing man's machinery and man's environment. But there have been figurines discovered in the valley of Mohenjo-daro and Harappa in India, dating back over 5,000 years, showing people in various yoga positions, indicating that this science is much older than known history. The reason it's endured for such a long time is quite simply that it works. One of the wonderful things about it is that it works so quickly. I have seen people in just one practice feeling markedly better. In fact, I remember a class that I gave in Sacramento, California, a few years ago, and a lady came back to the second class with all her children in tow, and they said, "We wanted to see what our mommy was doing because she's changed. She no longer shouts at us." The benefits are very quick. The long-range benefits, of course, take a longer time. But immediately one feels more relaxed, immediately one feels more centered in himself. And if one can understand how this works, then one will be able to use that science effectively in other ways than simply going through the yoga postures. There are certain realities of our being which, if we understand, we can make happen better. Some of these realities are things that we're beginning to understand and rediscover on our own by various other disciplines today. One of them is relaxation. If we can learn to really relax properly, and relaxation is usually considered to be a state of limpness, but what we're really talking about is a state of openness. In limpness, you will find that very often people are not open to influences, psychological suggestions, opportunities, and so on. The openness of the heart, the openness of the body to the flow of energy is what we're really talking about. To be able to get rid of those tensions and obstacles in the body that prevent the flow of energy from happening well. This is being discovered more and more widely as one of the great secrets of health. Many classes are given today on relaxation therapy and stress reduction and so on. Yoga teaches you how to relax the body. It does it by various positions that help to stretch and tense the body, because until you tense your body, you aren't often aware of the tension that's there. When tensing it first and then relaxing it, you can release even that amount of tension and become much more centered. But there's something else that helps in this regard that I wanted to talk about today, because the other can be got from books. This is not to be found so easily in books. And that is that we are a part of another and a higher reality. Another and higher reality, a reality of light. And if we can learn to live in a way that will magnetize our lives, we will find that we can accomplish what we're really looking for. When you introduce electricity into a wire, it creates a magnetic field, doesn't it? A strong flow of electricity creates a strong magnetic field. You've heard about the aura. All of you, I'm sure, have heard of it. What is the aura? In fact, the aura is your magnetic field. That when you introduce strong energy into your body, particularly the strongest flow is in the spine, and if that flow of energy can be freed to flow well, this can be done in physical ways by manipulation, by stretching the spine, by aligning the vertebrae. That's what makes chiropractic a wonderful science. But it's also something more than that. If you can do it by sitting straight, by having positive expectations, by always rising to meet whatever occasion faces you instead of sort of trying shrinkingly to avoid it, if you can have an affirmative attitude, this will be an aid. Because that flow of energy in your body, that flow of energy through your nervous system, indeed creates a magnetic field. And that magnetic field, as I said, is your aura. There are some people whose auras you can feel the moment they enter the room. The reality of this aura can be experienced on many different levels. It is said in the Indian scripture, in the yoga scripture of Patanjali, that when a person has developed the quality of ahimsa, which is to say non-violence, to perfection, when it becomes deep-rooted, then hostility ceases in his presence. And indeed, there are some people around whom it's just impossible to get angry. They have that kind of magnetism. Gandhi was such a person. He would walk into a room full of squabbling politicians, and suddenly everybody would be at peace. The moment he left, perhaps it changed, I don't know. But at least his aura was so strong, his magnetism was so powerfully harmonious and calming, that people under the influence of that aura also were calmed. People can have a very strong kind of animal magnetism. Some people have a very strong artistic magnetism. Some people have a kind of failure magnetism. When we direct the right kind of magnetism, there isn't really anything that we can't accomplish. At least so people have claimed, and I believe it. There's a story of a man who died and went to heaven and was being shown around heaven by St. Peter. And St. Peter took him finally to the heavenly junkyard. He said, this contains all the things that people in the world rejected, that were offered to them, gifts that heaven wanted to give them that they rejected. And the man looked at all these wonderful things. He said, well, that's impossible. He said, for instance, look at that Rolls Royce over there. How could anybody have turned down a Rolls Royce? And St. Peter said, well, it's interesting that you asked that question, because in fact the person who turned it down was you. He said, well, that's ridiculous. It's impossible. And St. Peter said, yes, because every time you prayed for a car, you visualized a Volkswagen. You could have had a Rolls Royce. When people like Catherine Ponder write books on how to be wealthy and how to materialize the need for prosperity and so on, I think that a mistake that they make, though I think very highly of much of what they say, of their basic premise, but I think it's a mistake to do what they usually recommend, which is to clearly visualize what you shall have. They're thinking of a thing and they're limiting themselves by that thing, and I've discovered, at least in my limited experience, that when I've thought that way, it's often disappointing when I get it. I get it, yes, but then it doesn't turn out to be quite what I wanted. And one time, at a very important time in my life, I can remember getting it and having it absolutely blow up in my face. It was one of the greatest disasters of my life. And so I've learned to, instead of concentrate on the thing that I want, concentrate on that flow of energy. And that flow of energy, when it's right, also, just as you have an aura around you, so any thought that you send out will be an aura, will create an aura too, will be a magnetic field that will draw to itself whatever it is that you want. This is the power of positive thinking, and it works. To send out a strong, joyous expectation is going to bring you joyous benefits. If you want to be radiantly happy and well, then this is a technique that you can use. Always live in the thought of being energy, in the thought of being a body of light. In fact, when you do different postures, if you practice yoga, or if you don't, then, well, let me say, do practice yoga. It's a good thing to do, and you don't need to do a lot. But when you do the postures, instead of sort of leaping into them, do them in such a way as to create a sense of the light that you walk within. Try to strengthen that light. You know, Edgar Cayce said something very interesting. He was in a department store, and he was about to get into the elevator. He was accustomed to seeing people's auras. And as he was just about to get in, he suddenly stepped back, and the door closed, the cable broke, and everybody in the elevator was killed. And he tried to think later, why did I step back? He realized it was because he didn't see any auras around those people. Their time had come to go. They had already withdrawn their energy, and that happens at the point of death, that your time has come, but also what it means is that there's no protection there. Anything can hit you. As long as you can walk within that light, and you will see that what can come to you in the way of ill health or negative circumstances mistreatment by others, anything that you might consider that you would not want, it will always be because there's an opening there. It's sort of like if you've got an umbrella, the rain doesn't stop, but you don't get wet. Or if you get wet, you only get spattered, you don't get soaked. So it is that you have certain things that must come to you just because you're human. If you accept the law of karma, you can say that it must come to you because of your karma. But in any case, living as a human being is to be subject to a variety of disasters as well as a variety of blessings. And there's just no way we can avoid it. But we can somehow put ourselves in a position where they don't hit us in the same way. Two people can be affected by the same disaster, but affected completely differently. And there's a law that somehow protects us if we can learn to live in harmony with it. Some people go through the midst of the most terrible epidemics and are not touched. During the war, soldiers on the Pacific battlefront would write home cheerily, confidently, until suddenly one morning they would wake up and they would know that this would be the day they would be killed. Now, how do they know? Some intuition tells them, but the bullets just come as they come. It's not as if until the day that they are to be killed, bullets coming to them suddenly hit their aura and go blip over the aura and then on again or something. It's not a mechanical kind of thing, and yet somehow it seems to work, that they get in the way of a bullet or something. And yet, if you really have the right expectation and the right positive understanding, somehow you can be protected, you can be in the right place at the right time. Like a story that I read of a man in Allahabad in India many years ago, at a time when they had a disastrous landslide and many, many people were killed. He was a lawyer pleading a case in court. And in the middle of that talk, he got something caught in his throat. He couldn't understand what it was, and he tried to clear it, and it wouldn't come out. Finally, he had to sort of coughingly ask the court to be excused while he went outside, and he went out into the sidewalk and coughed heartily and spat into the gutter. The moment he did so, he heard a tremendous rumble behind him, and he turned around, the entire courthouse had disappeared. But it wasn't his time to go. Stories like that are always amazing when they happen. Just before the bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, many people were invited by relatives that they hadn't heard from in years, or by other unusual circumstances, and left the city. It wasn't their time to go. A friend of ours was to come on that plane, that disaster from Chicago, remember, that killed so many people? She was to be on that plane. And her daughter, who is a member of our community, wrote to her and said, maybe you should come later. And so she did come later. She canceled her flight. Stories like this are common. There's a certain something that prevents some people from getting it in the neck when other people, it seems to be their time. Is there anything we can do to help further that good thing along? Indeed, there is. It's when there's some kind of opening there that you become open to negative circumstances. Now, I don't think I would have dared talk like this 15 years ago. I'm not sure I'm wise to talk like this now. It sounds sort of goofy because we live in a world where everybody thinks that everything is mechanical. A scientist back in the 19th century said, if you can't show me a model of the universe, I can't understand it, I can't accept it. And yet we know now that the universe is not a mechanical thing at all. It's really just sort of vast seas and flowing currents of energy. And it's a world very different from the one you and I know. And we do know by inference, we can see the evidence that there's something else going on than the mechanical. And indeed, I can say that when I have felt positive, things have always gone right. And when I have somehow felt discouraged, they have started to go wrong. And I can see that there are some people who are simply accident prone. Things always go wrong for them. And there are some people who seem immune to everything. And I see that it always ties into the kind of expectations they hold. That if they have the right kind of understanding, the right kind of consciousness, then troubles are minimized and benefits are maximized. And bit by bit I begin to see that in fact it's so. That if we have the right kind of expectation, we can be lucky. If we have the right kind of expectation, we can be happy. Not always lucky, but always happy, yes. A year ago, I had an experience that came to me that was exceedingly painful. And we go through these things in life, we can't avoid those. And yet I found that after many years of meditation, I could see the pain of it, but the pain didn't touch me. I felt completely free in myself, and I didn't wish things to be any different from what they were. Because I saw that I was centered here, and this was my reality. You reach a point where no matter what goes on, you can keep your peace of mind. No matter what goes on, you can be happy. And when you have that, that is real well-being. There are so many people who define health in terms of not being in the hospital and not having a fever. But isn't the kind of health we want that kind of radiant energy that keeps us glowing from inside? And I've seen some people like that who are crippled with some disease and still had that joy. We'd love to have both, but if we have to choose, isn't the joy the more important? Actually, good health begins from that joy. The more we can live in joy, the more we can have good health. Now, there are two ways of achieving that kind of energy. One is to become, well, three, let's say it this way, to become aware of it. To always feel that you are moving in an aura of light. Strengthen that light by positive thinking, by sending out, the more you can think of others. I've seen that those people who are trying to grab happiness for themselves are never the happy ones. Those who are trying to give it to others are always happy. Those people who are trying to be healthy just for themselves are usually not happy and not healthy. But those people who are trying to serve other people and forgetting themselves for the welfare of others, somehow they always seem to be glowing. Their health seems good. Everything seems to work well for them. We have an extraordinary experience in our community at Ananda that there we've been some 15, 16, going on 16 years now. And we've had just about no serious accidents. I can say just about categorically no serious accidents, except that we had one. But one might think, well, it could have been a lot worse. The guy's alive and he shouldn't have been alive. And he's happy and he should have been just wiped out. A human vegetable. What happened was that he was standing on a dark street in the night and talking to some people in a car, and a truck came by that had one of these mirrors that extend like this, and he couldn't see the mirror in the night, and the mirror hit him like this. Caved his forehead in. It should have killed him. It should have been like a prefrontal lobotomy, made him a human vegetable. It's actually made him much sweeter, much more aware, and he's doing wonderfully. That was the one serious accident we've had. We've had several other near misses, but somehow there's a protection there. When you get a lot of people thinking this way, it does seem to work. When you think this way and mix with positive people and avoid negative people and become more aware of this light, that's the first of these three things that are important. The next of them is to remove the obstructions to the flow of the energy. This you can do, certainly, by right diet. This you can do by the various postures that concentrate on freeing tensions in the body. This you can do by meditating and learning to completely relax yourself. This you can do by psychological ways too, such as not wishing the world to be other than what it is. You may say, well, but I don't want to be just a passive sponge. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying that it's only when you accept what it is that you can do something about it. Whereas if you keep wishing it were something else, you're not going to be able to deal with the actual reality that's there. If only it weren't raining, if only it weren't raining, so you go out without a raincoat, that's not going to do it. But you know it is raining, you wear a raincoat, and you're fine. If you face the reality that is, then you can do something about it. This is what I mean, psychologically. I remember this one man in India. He was a swami, and he was taking a train trip. Well, some of the swamis in India take train trips without buying tickets because they don't have any money, and they figure that society should support them. And that used to be the way, but now things are different, and it doesn't work that well, and the companies don't appreciate this attitude. And so, as he was walking by, the station master seeing him, assumed that he was one of those swamis and grabbed him like this. Well, it's quite a shock to be walking peacefully along with a crowd and somebody reaches out of the crowd and grabs you. And the way this swami handled it was wonderful, because all he did was instantly accept that, oh, all right, he grabs me. Instead of, what are you doing? I want to do like this. Just suddenly was relaxed, just like a kitten. And the man saw that he had his ticket and all was well. And how would most people respond? Why, how dare they treat me like this? I bought my ticket just like anybody else. And they get more and more mad. A week later, they're still talking about it. I remember up in going to Lake Tahoe one time to go skiing. The car rammed into a Greyhound bus, the car I was driving. We came to the snow line and I put my foot on the brakes and it just sort of took off like a snow goose, hit the bus, totaled the car, didn't even scratch the bus. And we got onto the bus to go to the nearest town to rent a car and go skiing. And as we were getting in, some of the passengers said, oh, what a pity, you've destroyed your car. And I was sort of taken aback because I knew I'd totaled the car, but I hadn't bothered to define it as a pity. And so when they said this, I said, well, you know, a week from now I'd feel fine. Why should I waste a week? I feel fine now. The thing is, if we can relax, we can accept the reality that is, instead of standing there wringing one's hands over the totaled car and wondering how to get home and the whole weekend is ruined because you totaled your car, you just take the best, make the best of it, and you find that in that relaxed attitude, everything flows well. In fact, it worked out fine. The car was, we were able to take parts out of it and put it in another car that worked better, and anyway, it worked out fine. The thing is that if you can really accept a reality, be relaxed about it, just sort of flow with what is, then you will be able to make the best use of your energy instead of just sort of stewing. And the third thing is something that I talked about in the first talk this morning, and that is a principle that was passed by my guru, Paramahansa Yogananda, who wrote Autobiography of a Yogi. I'm sure many of you have read the book or at least heard his name. He used to say, the greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. Now, we've talked of flow and relaxing with that flow, and it's important to understand along with that how very great the control needs to be if you're going to go with a flow and not merely disintegrate. A surfboard rider, for example, he has to be very much in control of his actions, even though he's sufficiently in tune with the way the wave flows to go with it. If he isn't in control, he'll just fall. And so it's going with the waves of life. It's going with trying to see what's happening, trying to flow with what's happening in life, and at the same time then going with it and putting your will out, and you can go much farther and still remain in control. The greater the will, the greater the flow of energy, and that will is something that we need to learn how to express. Will, as I said earlier this morning, willingness, wanting to do what you have to do, saying yes to life, going along with things that are good, and then if they aren't good, determining which battles you can win, because you can't always just say that everything's wonderful when bombs are exploding and terrorists are killing people and so on. There are things that we have to oppose. But when we do so, oppose those things that you can oppose effectively. You can't fight every battle. Choose the battles that you have to fight and don't fight with anger. Because what will happen is if we fight angrily, some residue of bad vibrations will be left. Whatever you do, do it because this has to be accomplished. When you act in this way, then you will learn that by directing a flow of energy toward whatever it is you're trying to do. I was talking earlier about the need to concentrate at the point between the eyebrows. This is sort of the gathering point, the focusing point for your energies. If you can bring your energies to that point and send that energy out through the point between the eyebrows, you will find that then it has the focus that it needs to have power. You can indeed find success in life if you can put power into whatever you do. The greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. The greater the flow of energy, the stronger the magnetism. The stronger the magnetism, the greater the likelihood that you will draw to yourself whatever you want. And that means not merely likelihood, but certainty if your willpower is strong enough. Another point that's very important, and that is to understand that you are more than your ego. That if you act only from ego and desire, then you will be not only limiting that flow, but you might indeed be getting yourself in tune with the wrong flow. There is a kind of higher thing happening. A very good question to ask yourself whenever you come into a new situation or a work that you need to do or something is not to say, what do I want to do? Not to say, what do we vote on? But say, what is trying to happen? It's a very interesting way of going at it, to try to attune yourself to the flow of the moment. Peter Caddy, who helped found Findhorn, a community in northern Scotland, told the story of how one day they were working on pouring a cement walk outside their trailer, caravan as they call it in England. And at tea time, his wife Eileen came out and said, come in and have some tea. And he said, well, I really need to finish this job. And she said, oh, come on, it won't take long. Just have some tea and then you can finish it. Well, they had tea and then it was too dark and then they put it off till the next day. Well, the next day the energy was different and there was something else happening. And the third day something else was still happening. It went on like that for, I think, 15 years. Finally, they got around to it and finished the job. You'll find that that's true sometimes, that there is a certain energy happening, and if you go with that energy when it happens, you can do things in wonderful ways. But if you obstruct that energy by saying, I want to do this, very often you block it and it doesn't ever happen again. So try to attune yourself to what is trying to happen. Or if you want to put it this way, and it very often is this way, try to attune yourself to what the divine is offering you. Because there's a certain kind of flow coming into your consciousness that if you can attune yourself to, everything always seems to work for the best. We had a building that I designed in, it came to me in meditation, which had a sort of a curved roof, very unusual kind of roof, oriental kind of appearance. And our workmen, our carpenters, didn't know how to build it. They were studying how to build it while building the rest of the building, read books on it, went to different builders and so on. Nobody seemed to know. They finally reached the point where they couldn't hammer another nail without knowing how to do that roof. They couldn't go any further. So they sat down and they meditated one last time and asked for guidance. No guidance came. And they got up and started to walk off the job when a car drove up. And a man stepped out and he said, well, I wonder if I can be of any help to you. They said, well, yes, in fact, we have this problem. Who are you? And he said, he smiled, he said, you know, you're very lucky that I came. I'm probably the only builder in California who knows exactly what you need. He said, I was down in Santa Barbara, that's what, 500 miles away from where we live? I was down there this morning and I'd often thought of coming up here. This morning I thought, I've got to go today. And I've come and they were able to continue the job. I've seen that happen so often, that when you try to attune yourself to that higher flow and ask to be introduced into that flow and to work with it, that then when you will a thing, you don't will it because I want it, but because it's what's happening, it's what's right, it's what must be, it's what whatever you feel and however you interpret what you feel in your own mind. But if you enter into that, somehow you will find that things work much more effectively. So when I say the greater the will, the greater the flow of energy, I must also put this little sort of caveat in there that if you understand that by will, we are talking about an attuned will. There can be the egoic will of I desire such and so, and that too has its own power. But the power is augmented enormously if, for example, you jump into a river and swim with the current instead of trying to swim against the current. Ah, but there are times when the currents are wrong. What do you do then? Well, you get your strength by swimming against them, and then when the currents start going right, that strength will help you. You can't do everything right away, But if you put out the energy to do the right thing when you can, then you will find that that current will gradually change, and suddenly things do go right, and everything does work for the best for you. Now, to be radiantly happy and well, there are certain, indeed, techniques that can help you. It sounds strange to talk of techniques when we speak of philosophy or mental affirmation or spiritual states of consciousness and so on. But indeed, we're living in a physical body, and when you want to lift something, you have to use the law of leverage. When you think, you have to send your energy through the brain in a certain way for it to function right. There are certain parts of the brain that stimulate different parts of the body and so on. But they're beginning to find that it's more than that. They're beginning to find that we are more than just a body of nerves and muscles and bones. That, in fact, this is something absolutely astounding, and I can only say that several people saw it to whom I spoke. I didn't even see it. But I heard it first in Munich, then in Frankfurt, then in London. People had seen a TV program in which three men were shown who didn't have any brains and yet were able to function perfectly well. Two of them were students in college. The only reason they discovered they didn't have brains was because they didn't have perfect motor control over their muscles. And so they subjected them to some tests. They certainly had to have the sort of basic, whatever you call it, cortex or something. But up here there was nothing. Isn't that incredible? But they found also that when they put stimulation to the brain for certain parts of the body and asked them, is this the way it feels? It would move the finger, for example. They would ask, is this the way it feels to you when you make your finger move? And they all said no. There is something behind this mechanism, making the mechanism function. That's the only point I want to make. It's certainly beyond me to prove that that story actually happened. But since it was demonstrated, you might be interested enough to follow up on it. The important thing, however, is to understand that at the same time, we are physical mechanisms, and that this physical mechanism does, in fact, have some influence over our states of consciousness. You've read, for example, in the scriptures that heaven is above and hell is below. We know that literally that's not true. What's up for us is down for the people in Australia, for example. But we also know that this is subjectively a universal human experience. That all of us, when we feel well, we even use words like, I feel high, I feel uplifted. There's a certain upwardness to the energy in our body. And when we feel badly, we say we feel low, we feel depressed, we feel downcast. There's a downwardness to that energy. And it's a literal fact that if you can learn to gain enough control, to be conscious enough of your energy, to be relaxed enough so that that energy can be directed to flow freely, and then to learn to use your will correctly, acting upon that energy, to direct it upward in your body, you'll be quite amazed to see how you can change your state of consciousness in a second. That if something comes along to make you feel discouraged or depressed, and instead of allowing it, the moment you feel that, you feel this heaviness. The moment you feel the heaviness, concentrate on that energy in the spine and direct the energy upward. You'll be amazed how in a second even, or just in moments, put the energy, especially here at the point between the eyebrows, feel a surge of energy upward, suddenly your whole state of consciousness changes. When you are happy, the energy goes up. When you are downcast, the energy goes down. But it also works in a mechanical way, that when the energy flows upward, you become happy. This is a fact. Experience it. Try it. Experiment. When the energy flows downward, somehow you feel depressed. That's why sitting with a bent spine and looking down brings your energy downward and makes you feel moody. And if you feel moody, and just make yourself sit upright, make yourself look up, make yourself feel everything about you. Don't sort of collapse in a chair, but place yourself in a chair. Don't walk heavily on the heels of your foot. Walk on the balls of your foot. Stand light. Everything about you, let it be a light kind of thing. And you will find that the more you do that, the more automatically your whole attitude will change. This is where we come to the question of techniques. Breathing exercises, different postures, concentrating on certain centers like the point between the eyebrows. One good breathing exercise when you're feeling depressed or when you feel the need to be more joyful, is to simply do some deep breathing. The lungs will act, if you do deep, full breathing, the lungs begin to act like a magnet that draw the energy up from the lower part of the spine to the lungs and the heart region. Then if you will sit in meditation and concentrate your gaze and attention here at the point between the eyebrows, this becomes the magnet, and from here to here it's easier to draw the energy. You'll find that everything will look different. The first time I tried this was a time when I was feeling very suddenly plunged into a violent mood. And I tried to reason my way out of it, and reason always shows you the reasons why you should feel the way you do. Reason is led by feeling when the feeling is strong. And so the more I reasoned, the more I could see reasons for being utterly miserable. And so I asked myself the question, do you really want to be miserable? The answer was obviously no. So I said, well, then what am I going to do about it to get out of it? There's no point in sitting here stewing, thinking about why I'm miserable. Let me just do something else. And I knew this teaching about the direction of energy, so I sat down in meditation and with all my willpower just plunged my mind here at the point between the eyebrows. In 5 minutes, everything looked rosy, the whole world looked different, I could see it. My whole reasoning supported a different view of things. It's always been amazing to me to see how the same circumstance can make two different people see it in two totally different ways and explain it in different ways. Some people will see it as something totally wrong, evil, bad, miserable, unjust. And other people will say, well, he's learning, or there's a lot to be gained from this. It's not all bad. They always find some positive explanation because their attitude is different. Well, what's in it for you to have that attitude? Everything. Because when you have the right attitude, everything goes right. But when you have the wrong attitude, you're putting out that kind of magnetism that draws to you everything wrong into your life. So when you have the right attitude, then you're sending out that kind of magnetism that draws to yourself those things that are in harmony with that magnetism. I had this theory when I was in college, and I've written about it in my book, The Path, which you've all received, I believe. The theory was, if you want to be lucky, expect to be lucky, but don't sit around waiting for it. Go out and meet it halfway, and you'll always be lucky. And I found that it seemed somehow to work. I decided I wanted to go to Mexico. I didn't have any money, and I didn't know how to get rich quick, short of robbing a bank. I didn't want to spend the whole summer working to earn it, because then I'd never get there on my vacation. But I found, just flicking through the pages of our college almanac yearbook, I found a prize that was offered for an essay for $100, which in those days was a lot of money. $100, I looked at the topic, and it was a topic that, it was the basic principles underlying the government of the United States, and I thought, my God, only a legal student would do this. I thought, who would write such an essay? And I thought, well, that's right, who would? I checked back several years, nobody had won the prize. Presumably everybody had been frightened of it. So I thought, well, if I'm the only entry, I stand a good chance. I wrote the essay, I was the only entry, I won. And I took a trip, I was hitchhiking. I happened to get on the train because I had a ticket from New York to Philadelphia, and on the train I met some people who we were talking, we became friendly, they invited me to their home. It was somebody in the family was getting married, and all the relatives were there, and they were feasting and all sorts of revelry, which I enjoyed for a day or two. And then they said, you know, we have a son-in-law who's driving to Mexico tomorrow, he'd be happy to have a second driver. So I got, in essence, you might say, one hitchhike from Philadelphia to Mexico City, 900 miles. 3,000 miles. 3,000 miles. 900 from Laredo only. And in this way I found everything constantly working right, just as long as I kept thinking that I was having a good time. But I didn't find what I was looking for in Mexico. I was looking for truth, and I hadn't yet realized that truth was something I have to find inside. And until I find it here, I'm not going to find it anywhere. I could wake up with the same stomach ache and moods in Mexico City as I could back in Philadelphia or New York. And so I got kind of discouraged for a while. And the moment I got discouraged, everything started to go wrong. And as long as I was discouraged, no matter where I went, just nothing broke right, until finally I regained my usual buoyant attitude, and then suddenly everything started to go right again. Now, it isn't always so. If you put out a weak thought, you get weak results. But if you learn that the greater the will, the greater the flow of energy, and if you put out a really strong thought toward what you want, if you decide, for example, what, about 90% of businesses fail, don't they, new businesses? Some alarmingly high percentage. But those that succeed, succeed because the person trying is somebody who couldn't possibly fail. Because if he fails on this, he'll try something else. And if he fails in that, he'll try something else. And in one way or another, he's putting out the kind of energy that just can't lose. If you have that kind of energy, then you won't be one of that 90%. But most people, when they go into a thing, they do it, well, it might be a good idea, let's try it. And they put sort of wimpy energy into it, and they get wimpy results, and nothing happens. No, but when you strongly will that you are going to do such and so, and if you really positively know, not with... See, there's a difference between positive and wishful thinking. Wishful thinking is like a general invading a foreign country with 10 soldiers, hoping that the enemy will be asleep in bed. Positive thinking means assessing the strength of the enemy and just coming up with more energy than they've got. You need to know what the obstacles are. That's not negative thinking. You need to know what you're up against so that you can generate enough energy to overcome it. You've got to be realistic, of course. But at the same time, don't just trust to blind luck. Don't just hope for the best. Know that those who fail, it's like William the Conqueror, when he landed on the soil of England, what was the first thing he did? Fell flat on his face in the mud. And this gasp went through the whole ranks of his army. They were very superstitious in those days, and I think any army looking at something like that would say it was a bad omen. This gasp of despair went through the whole army. And William, who was a man of enormous willpower and courage, he stood up with his hands full of mud. He said, I'm so eager to conquer this country, I've grasped it with both my hands. They all cheered and they... Well, you can... When you put out that absolute will to win, you will win. It depends on the thing that generates that energy is willpower. As I say, it can't be wishful thinking, but when it must happen, if it doesn't exist, it will have to be manifested for you. An example of will used, and not always rightly, is Israel. The Jewish people are people of enormous willpower, but they don't always do things sweetly. And this is the lesson they need to learn. But yet that willpower, everything they do, somehow they succeed in. They're extraordinary. And if they could learn to balance that with sweetness, they could be indeed the chosen race. We need to balance all these things. To do God's will, not just, I'm going to do it, and then you blast your way through, but try to go with what wants to happen. Try to go with what the divine is. God is pouring blessings out on us all the time. And if we could only learn to live in that understanding. I went through one of the worst calamities of my life a few years ago. And a saint from India wrote me, take this as God's blessing. Oh my God, blessing? How can I think of that as a blessing? It was the one word I had to reject. I couldn't accept it. And yet, as I learned to live with the situation and try to adjust to it, I discovered in the end that indeed it was a blessing. There isn't anything that comes to you that cannot be turned into a blessing, even if it doesn't look that way at first. Go with what is. Go with what the divine wills for you. If you live in that way, it's not popular to talk that way, but I'm not really interested in being popular. I'm interested in the truth. And so if people reject it, okay, I know it works because I've done it. And that's what I'm trying to share with you. If you live in attunement with the divine in you. And remember that God's will doesn't have to express itself in a cosmic way all the time. It can often be in little ways. He likes it when you bring him into little things.